Welcome to Who Are You, a CSI podcast. I am Raven, and I've seen CSI thrown through around 3 to 4 times.
And I'm Nick, and these are my first time experiencing these episodes.
And today we are reviewing season 4, episode 2, All for Our Country. Original air date was October 2nd, 2003. Director is Richard J. Lewis. Writers were Anthony E. Zeiker, Andrew Lipsitz, and Carol Mendelson. And we don't begin today's episode with shots of the Vegas Strip. But Nick, I am still interested in what our Vegas score is for today's episode.
Now I'm trying to remember. I think there's an early one or whatever, but it's pretty low. Okay. It's 16.
Oh, wow.
So there's only 3 shots the entire episode. There's never a double.
Okay.
There is a random shot of like Vegas at night, but like suburb Vegas, and we don't traditionally count.
We don't count the burbs here.
Because I can't even guarantee that those shots aren't of California. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
LA. So they could use any B-roll for that.
Yeah.
So pretty low. I didn't go back and check, but I think it's probably lower than any score. Although, I mean, even under the old scoring system, it would be like a 22. So
yeah, it would still be very low. So instead of the Vegas Strip, we begin today's episode with a previously on CSI.
Yes.
So we get a little catch up. So if you haven't listened to our episode right before this, and then like you don't need to watch the previously on CSI because we'll have given you a nice like in-depth discussion on it. So then we land with Jim Brass and Grissom there with the bodies of our serial killers. And we learn that Grissom doesn't carry when he is serving search warrants. So Jim Brass is like, get out of the house. I need to secure the house and I can't have you here. So
I didn't think that was so weird. I mean, it can't be so weird that Brass would ask, right? Like, and Brass knew to at least check. So
maybe since the Sarah rushing in instance, Jim Brass is like covering all his bases every time he's with a CSI and they have to like clear a scene. He's like, you know what? Like, one of you went rogue. And so now I have to be like really careful about what's up.
Well, it is interesting because it is like a juxtaposition because Jim Brass still doesn't want him clearing the scene. But you should still have your just like Sarah had her piece outside the door, she should still have it just in case because anything could happen.
Yes.
That's why they presumably have already undergone training.
Right.
Firearms and whatever. And so he expects him to have it. I think if anything, he would be like, stay here and watch this exit.
Yeah.
So that if the guy comes running out, then you can stop him.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, you don't even have anything. Well, then get out of the house.
Yeah.
However, I'm really peeved at this scene because of basically the next scene.
Okay. So do you want me to continue talking and then we'll get there?
Yeah.
Okay. Jim Brass then goes by himself, doesn't call in any additional backup, just goes by his lonesome to clear this big old house. So he walks through the whole house. He ends up calling in for rescue, but he's like, no rush, like they're dead. So like send a rescue here, but it's not a big deal. And then Jim Brass is outside with Grissom and they're talking about the fact that they had 2 undercover officers watching the house.
Which he did not mobilize or call to, despite the fact he was standing by the door when this all occurred with Grissom. Like, go across the street, Grissom. There's 2 undercover cops in that van.
But to be fair, Grissom wasn't sure they were undercover cops. He waited until Jim Brass came outside, and he said, no, like, are those your guys?
I mean, that's what Brass should have told Grissom. Oh, you're not armed? Go across the street. That van has 2 undercover cops. I need backup clearing this house. I need someone to go around the back and make sure they aren't running away. I understand not bringing them when you serve the warrant.
Right, because weren't expecting this was not the scene. Cover. Yeah, and this was not the scene that you were expecting. So.
And so it's like, and I understand why it worked this way, but I was like, Brass, you're the one who put yourself at undue risk here.
Oh,
you had 2 police officers 11 and a half feet from you, and you chose not to use their services.
Nope, not at all. So this is what brings us to credits. We then have David arriving on scene. Grissom and Jim Brass are talking to the undercover officers. And this is my first spot.
Yes.
The guest star. And I was like, if this is also not one of Nick's guest stars, I am going to be shooketh.
I have a laundry list of things to have spotted him from.
I have 2 main things. And then I know that he's in a bunch of other things as well. So one of the undercover officers, his name is Bill in the episode, but his name in real life is Jeffrey Dean Morgan. And I know him primarily from Supernatural.
Yep, he plays John Winchester.
Yep, he plays the father, Dean, the Winchester.
Sam.
Sam, yeah. Yep. And then I also know him from Grey's Anatomy. He is Denny. He's in 23 episodes of Grey's Anatomy as Denny Duquette.
I have two other polls.
Okay, I was going to say
pretty big.
Yeah, I was going to say The Walking Dead. Right?
The comedian. Yeah, he plays Negan in The Walking Dead, who is like the most infamous person. Which I've actually never seen an episode of Walking Dead with him in it.
Who he plays in The Walking Dead, and that it's a huge role in the show, but I've never seen him play it in the show, so I didn't want to put that as one of mine.
But like, I remember when they announced him, it was a big to-do. That was like when I was watching it. Just the season before, I just was like, I've had enough of this. I also think I just got busier in life. And then he plays the comedian on the movie The Watchmen, which is a great movie.
The Watchmen is a really good movie.
I
guess I don't remember him as the comedian.
He's like the brawlery, fightery street guy who... He's got the smiley face pin, and the symbol of the Watchmen.
I'm now looking through pictures from the Watchmen, and I'm like, that is him.
That is pretty abhorrent as well. Yeah. Or at least does some pretty abhorrent things.
Yeah. I haven't watched that movie in a long time. That is a really good movie. So, pretty big spot to guest star here. And, I mean, we have to give credit. He has a legitimate credit. He is Bill Nolan in this episode. He's not like... undercover officer number one.
Yeah, he's got lines, right? They're in a number of scenes, and then they're referenced a bunch in the episode.
Yes,
as well.
Yes. So they're talking to these undercover officers, and they were not at the scene when the serial killers were murdered because they were responding to a officer down call. So an officer down call came in. They went to respond to that. They came back, everything looked peaceful, and so they didn't see any activity on the house until Grissom and Jabra showed up. So Grissom's like, hey, like, you guys know the drill, gonna need to see your guns. They're very tense about this. They're very like, what do you mean? Like, they're defensive, they're kind of like giving back, but they acquiesce, and you know, they're kind of checking that out. Nick and Warwick pull up, and then all three walk up to the house. Nick goes inside. Warwick is noting that, like, it doesn't look like there's any forced entry from the front door. The front door looks good. Nick finds plastic shards on the carpet, which are definitely going to come up quite a bit in this episode. David is also there. The wife's temperature is 85.5, putting her time of death at around 11 p.m. And Nick is also near where he's, like, finding these plastic shards. There's blood. So he's like, okay, you know, there's, like, quite a bit of blood here. But there's also a lot of pheno-negative stains, meaning there are... like dark stains that kind of look like blood, but they're not blood. And so this will also come up later and we'll learn what these pheno negative stains are.
I actually had no idea what he meant by that.
Oh, okay.
Until like later on the episode.
And you were like, oh,
okay. I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Grissom finds towels from the hotel, from the sphere,
which we're still not sure. They have still not actually I think it's their fake name for a casino hotel that loosely refers to the Stratosphere.
Yeah.
Because they still will not actually say that that's the same place.
They will not.
And I think that's on purpose because there's probably a bunch of copyright.
There probably is. In this scene, we also have Warwick lifting shoe prints from newspaper that's by the back door. We return to our undercover officers. Jim Brass is with them. And the undercovers are like, well, case closed. Serial killer's dead. Yeah. We're done. Like,
who cares if they murdered anyone before?
Doesn't matter. And the only other thing that they point out about like what they might have noticed around the scene was that the kid in the house across the street made them. The kid was like, these two are like shady characters, and like, what's going on?
What's the big deal? There's no humans involved.
I mean, look, Captain. Come on, the way I see it, somebody did us a favor.
Yeah.
They're dead. Case is closed.
Hey. This isn't a favor, Bill. This is a screw-up.
It would have been a lot bigger screw-up if we didn't break surveillance and had an officer down four blocks away.
All right, what else did you see?
Kid in that house made us. Thought we were bad news.
You are bad news.
I thought the kid across the street was going to be like a spot the guest star. I was like, why does this kid look so familiar? I was like, I can't place him. At the end of the episode, I looked at his IMDb. He's in like six things ever, only as a child. I have no idea why I thought he looked familiar.
I also had a moment where I was like, maybe he does. And then I just was like, I don't know. Maybe he just has like generic kid vibes.
Generic, my dad's a producer on this show vibes.
Yeah. So we leave our storyline A for a bit. Sarah and Catherine are at a college house. Catherine, as they're like walking in, is kind of making a joke about like, why don't all the CSIs live together? And she includes Grissom in this. And Sarah's like, not Grissom.
Yep.
Can't live with
Grissom. No cohabitation.
No cohabitation. And so they walk in, there's officers there. There's just water pouring from the ceiling. So one of the officers hands them an umbrella and is like, hey, you might not want to need this.
I like that he gives them like his umbrella so that he's just getting rained on now. Like, we only had the two umbrellas. So I guess you guys, he's being a gentleman, I guess.
He's being a gentleman. He's being very nice. But we learn that the victim is upstairs, which prompts Catherine to say, it's raining man juice, which almost definitely has to be the name of our episode.
That is a great name for an episode.
Like, I was like, yeah.
It's raining man juice. Hallelujah.
So they go upstairs to find a pretty horrendously bloated body in a bathtub. O'Reilly's just chilling. O'Reilly doesn't seem fazed by this at all. He's cool.
Here's a great random Walking Dead reference. There's a giant bloated zombie in a well in like season two, and at Herschel's place. And Herschel has been a former Spot the Guest Star on the show.
Yes. So we also learn in the scene that the last time like his roommates had seen him alive was on Thursday. We then have Warwick talking to a dispatcher. He wants the dub and the phone number from the 911 call, like the officer down that like pulled the undercover officers away from the crime scene. He sends that number to Grissom. I'm also going to call this as a missed Spot the Guest Star on your part, Nick.
For who?
For the dispatcher.
Oh, I do have that as a Spot the Guest Star.
Oh, later?
Marisol Nichols.
Yes.
But I have it for... I didn't really recognize in that quick
scene. In this scene? Okay.
It was later on when she's talking to Warwick. I was going to save it for that.
Yeah. We can do that. That's fine. I just...
Oh, well, let's do it now.
Yeah, let's do it now. Okay, go ahead. It's yours. So, yeah, I just figured that if someone was going to know her, you were going to be the one.
Oh, you didn't recognize it?
No,
oh, yeah. Yes, and where I know her from is she plays Hermione Lodge in the Riverdale show, which is Veronica Lodge's mom. Which she's in way less episodes of Riverdale than I thought she was in. But again, I think that was one of the shows I stopped watching.
I mean, she's in 67 episodes.
Is it 67? Okay,
never mind. Yeah, it's in 67 episodes, She's also in 24 episodes of 24.
Yes, and I'll be honest, I know exactly who that character is. Don't remember her as that. I don't think she looks like my memory of that character at all. And that was like a big character. That was like, there were basically three main characters of that show at that time, and she was one of them.
Yeah.
But the other guy, Almeida, who's the her like opposite in most of those scenes in 24, if he was in an episode, I would know him immediately.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was like, I saw her in 24, and I was like, who's this before? I was like, wait, is that the character I think it is? And I was like, did not beg her for that. But yeah, no. Mostly know her as Hermione Lodge's mom. Or Hermione Lodge, Veronica Lodge's mom in many episodes. Who is like a foil, like, but not really. She's never really doing anything that bad.
Okay.
She's just always kind of like being a Richie Rich. And the kids are like, you know, kind of like, well, you should be nice to people.
And she's
like, nope, I should be a capitalist.
Which, I mean, we're living in a capitalist hellhole right now in the United States. So we're pretty used to rich people being like, you know what? Nah.
Yes,
I'm not going to do the right thing.
Did we ever, is she credited as 9/11 dispatcher? She must be.
Is credited as Jane, 9/11 dispatcher.
Because, I think Warwick gives her a name later on.
Yeah.
We'll get to that scene.
Yeah, we'll get to that scene in a little bit.
Okay. I have thoughts.
Okay, all right. I also have thoughts, so we'll definitely talk about it. So Warwick sends that number over to Grissom. Grissom is outside of his crime scene.
You know what? I do have a note for this.
Okay.
This phone is definitely got to be a product placement.
Grissom's phone or the phone that they're calling?
Grissom's phone.
Grissom's phone, okay.
It's such a weird phone with a weird flip in this like center display screen, which I meant to look it up to see what it was, but again, they're not really using names. They're being very... undercover covert with their product placements. They're really like old school, like they're there, but they spend a long time letting you stare at a close-up of that phone. And you can also tell it was shot post and inserted into that scene.
Okay.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
I didn't block that.
Yeah, then they went for like close-ups with a different camera or something. But yeah, I don't know what that phone was, but it looks like it belongs in the Matrix. It's got a weird like flip out center rotation. It's orange text screen in the middle. I forget sometimes how avant-garde dumb phones were before smartphones ever were.
Yeah.
Invented. Like there was a real like arms race.
There was.
And these like sleek, small phones.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And now we all carry around mini televisions.
This is true. Grissom uses this product placement to, he walks towards Harmon Hill, which is where the direction of where the Officer Down call was. And yes. He finds a discarded cell phone. He also finds like this dark liquid on the ground that seems to be attracting ants. So he takes a sample of this dark liquid. Jim Brass is then with the boy who spotted the undercover agent. His name is Bradley, and Bradley's mom, Grissom, is there as well. And he's saying that he saw a policeman go up to our serial killer's home, but there was no police car and he didn't hear any gunshots. So this is starting to be a little weird. Grissom is then with Doc Robbins in the morgue, and he's wondering if the husband, the Mr. Kleinfeld, was shot through a window, because he's like finding he's also finding like the shards.
Yeah, he says like foreign substance in the wound track. Yeah.
And so we learn that they were each shot once. Mr. Kleinfeld was shot like in the chest, like forward facing. Mrs. Kleinfeld was shot in the back. We then see the bloated body, the zombie in the well, being taken from the home via the window and like onto a crane / lift. We then, I've talked about this in earlier episodes. There's very little that like squigs me out watching this. Okay. Like I've seen it enough time, and I've watched other like true crime stuff, and I like horror movies. Like there's very little that when I'm watching CSI, I'm like, ooh, I can't. Catherine scooping up the remnants from the tub.
A bucket of man juice.
Blah, 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 blah.
Wearing these like sleeve things, and all I can think is like, you need a full suit.
So I don't,
you get one splash of that on yourself and you're gonna need to go to the hospital and get every antibiotic and antiviral they have in the shop.
It just, oh, it grossed me out so bad. But we learn in addition to that in this scene that the drain was not tampered with, so this like was not an issue with the drain. It just basically like as he started decomposing,
clogged up,
the drain got clogged.
There's one weird thing about this scene. Really, it's happened already, but the innuendo is that it's the hot water has been running.
Yes,
and it's was just hot, the hot water, and like, Riley was like sweating.
Yeah.
I want to know what kind of hot water heater these guys have out here.
Yeah, they just kept it hot
for 3 days. It's capable of producing a continuous stream of hot water.
I can't even get a hot shower for more than like 20 minutes in my house. I'm like, come on.
There are like four people who shower back to back to back in my house.
Gosh, I don't know how you guys handle it.
When we got a new hot water heater, we got like the 100-gallon tank.
Yeah.
Like the super tank. It's not 100 gallons, it's like 60 gallons, but it's like a huge amount of water. And so that we can pull hot water for a long time, but also like the hot water heater is technically on demand kind of thing. So
yeah,
we can infinitely shower, but that didn't really exist 20 years ago. Maybe it did, but
I'd be shocked if it was in, not to be mean, but this house was not like top of the line house. Like I'd be shocked if they were like, it was like a frat house.
I mean, it wasn't technically a frat house, but it was that kind of thing where a bunch of college kids will probably live there every year.
Yeah. So we are then with, Nick and Warwick, they're kind of looking over the plastic shards. We learn that the cell phone that was used to dial to make the 911 call was lost by a public defender. They then talk to Rich, who I put as a Bobby impersonator.
Yes,
I was like, where is Bobby?
He does.
I was like, who are you Bobby impersonator?
A little, right? There's a little like Bobby. I feel like we know loosely from other episodes that like other like Spot the Guest or something, that Bobby's not, or I guess you would know this because you've watched a lot of the show. I don't think he's in like the show for forever.
He's not, but I felt like we had him longer.
It's the beginning of the end.
It might be. I felt like we had him longer than this, but maybe we didn't. Maybe this is just how it goes. And so from this Bobby impersonator, we learn that the bullets pulled from the victims are like consistent with an officer's weapon, but it did not come from any of the four weapons taken from the undercover officers. They also realize in their discussion that they used the killer used a soda silencer. That is like where the plastic shards came from. That's where the brown liquid found.
It was actually almost kind of like bizarre that Grissom decided to test this liquid.
I mean,
it was, I think he was like, this is out of place in the vicinity. Like, who knows what this could be? Mm-hmm. Could have been coffee the guy spilled or something. Yeah, could have DNA in it. Could you have know, DNA I'm sure he was thinking a lot of things.
Yep.
But yeah, I was like, it was actually really easy for me to figure out this was a soda bottle before they got to it.
Yeah.
I drink a lot of soda.
But I was going to say, like, Nick and I are both
brown sugary liquid.
Nick and I are both soda enthusiasts of a sort. So
I don't know if I would use the word enthusiast because I'm not out here trying to convince anyone else. But I will probably be personal
enthusiast. I'm also not trying to peddle it on anyone else. But I drink soda basically every day.
I drink more soda than probably all other liquids combined.
That I know. Yeah, that
I don't really drink any coffee though.
Yeah. I drink coffee. So
this is my sole source of caffeine. Yeah. That's why.
Yeah. That makes sense.
I drink probably about 2 glasses of water a day and then milk in my cereal and then everything else is soda.
I just bought a new water bottle that has like markers on it that tells you like by hour every two. Yeah. Like how much water, because I know I need to drink more. Like I know I'm not staying as hydrated as I should. So we'll see. I don't know if it's going to help. I don't know. Weird things help me, though. Weird things make my ADHD brain happy, and I'm hoping this is one of those things that makes my ADHD brain
happy. You know, those things are usually not that hard to try, and if they work for you...
It was like $10 on Amazon, yeah. So I was like, you know what? If it doesn't work, it was $10 on Amazon.
Yeah.
Like,
but if it works for you, it would probably be worth 10 times that. So
yeah.
You're willing to try
yeah.
a bunch of things in hopes that they work, and if they do work, they're going to be life-changing.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see what happens there. It's supposed to be delivered on Sunday. So they continue to talk about the soda silencer, and they're wondering where can we get someone that can find us this soda bottle? And they turn around. There's a few things on this one. They turn around. I did like this scene. They turn around and they all look at Greg Sanders, and Greg Sanders fairly is like, what? Like, why are you all like looking at what?
He doesn't really have any DNA evidence right now, so he's not doing much on this case, although I would imagine there's still other cases going on.
I imagine there's other cases. Because
every time they need something, he's backed up.
And also, it's a soda silencer. You have the pieces of the soda bottle.
Well, I think they want the rest of it, right? Because you really only blow out the bottom. Because of the gunshot residue.
Yeah, I guess you're
I don't
right.
know why they want it. Maybe fingerprints, probably.
Maybe fingerprints, yeah. Maybe. Yeah. Okay. All right. That answered that. Never mind. We got to it.
We had to work through it.
We had to work through it together. We got there. We now have our part of the episode that features upbeat music for no
This is our music. Well, can we talk about why they feel like Greg has to be the person? Like, you have B cups. Other CSI. Are Warwick and Nick... Like, Nick starts doing one of those tedious jobs soon, but are they really so swamped that they can't go back to the crime scene and look for evidence?
But I mean, but Greg,
we want
Greg wants
Greg
to get out
to
of the lab.
The field. Yeah.
So this is an opportunity. So he's on the scene. He is searching for the soda bottle. We also have Nick doing some work analyzing the shoe print. Greg Sanders is like going through the trash. He's like walking the neighborhood. And again, we have just this like upbeat music playing the whole time. We then have, we're back with Sarah and Catherine. They're analyzing the shirt. They realize that it is a backward 7, meaning that the victim had a 7 in paint on his chest. This episode, for reasons I don't entirely understand, want to make Sarah seem completely out of touch in a way that she's never been out of touch before.
There's also a weird thing that happened. So when they were taking the body out of the house through the window,
there's
a scene of Sarah and Catherine, and Catherine is watching them take the body out of the house, and Sarah is, for lack of a better term, gawking at the hunky fireman who, like, she's not looking where the body is going or anything. She's staring at this fireman who's on the edge of the shot.
Yeah.
And I picked it up on the second I watched it, and I had to go back and rewatch it
and be like, wait,
like, make sure it all made sense. And I was like, why are they just having her? Sarah, did you not learn from Hank? Do not date random dudes.
Don't.
Emergency response. Because if something goes wrong, you're going to have to run into them all the time.
Yeah, it's not going to be good. Catherine is the one, because Sarah's like, is he a clown? Is he this? And Catherine's like, no, he's a sports freak. Like, that's why he has a 7 painted on his chest. So before we continue down that avenue, we have a walk and talk with Grissom and Jim Brass. Grissom thinks that the evidence is pointing towards a cop being the murderer of their murderers. And this leads to a bit of an argument, a little back and forth, a little Mom and Dad, don't fight.
Yeah, yeah. Mommy and Daddy are fighting. Like,
Mommy and Daddy are fighting.
I'll go a step further and say, really not that little. They go at it for a while. This scene's got some length to it.
Yeah, Jim Brass is like, oh, like says the guy who went to go serve a warrant without a gun. And Grissom's like, well, I'm not a cop. And then Jim Brass is like, you know, and again, Grissom's kind of pushing like, I'm pretty sure it's a cop. And Jim Brass is like, oh, maybe it's because Nick ran his mouth to like the news again. I was like, oh, my goodness, we're just.
I would have loved if Grissom like pulled up the oh, you want me to clear the scene like Sarah did?
Well, that still would have made his team.
Yeah, that's the thing. I was like, he wouldn't have known that was a bad comeback.
Greg Sanders enters, though, interrupts, I should say, this argument. And he's very adamant that he found something and that they both need to see it right now. So this brings all three of them into a room with the top part of an officer uniform. Greg Sanders found it in the storm drain. Jim Brass is noting a few different things. One, that this must be an older top because this has buttons and the new one has zippers, which I'm going to discuss in a very near scene.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're going
to say. Very near scene. I am going to talk about this because this was very clearly pointed out in this scene. Then, and also that the badge looks legit. So yes. Jim Brass is like, I'm going to go run the badge, see what I can find out.
I actually misunderstood the first time I watched this. I thought he was saying it was a costume. He said like the number one uniform shop. What he means is like that's where you go to buy your uniform.
Yeah, that's
legitimate uniform is really what he's saying. And I took it the complete opposite, that it was somehow a costume. And I spent way too long thinking about, wait, why would they have a real badge and a fake?
Yeah, like a fake costume.
And a fake shirt. I was like, they find a badge, I guess, and then you just needed a shirt, maybe. I don't know. And then when I watched it the second time, I was like, oh, no, that's not at all what he said.
No, he said
the exact opposite. Yeah. He was making it legitimate.
Yeah, he's making it legitimate. Grissom notices that the collar is dry. So they're hoping maybe they can pull some DNA from this collar.
I like that it's like the collar's dry, but it's also like it's 125 degrees out. So the guy must have been sweating, which would have made it wet. But then like...
But like baked it in. Baked the sweat in.
Well, then it would have dried out. But like... He's saying that because it means it hasn't been contaminated by the sewer water.
Yes, that's what he's meaning.
The sewer water could have also dried out because it's 125 degrees out. But I think they wouldn't expect to find any if it were wet.
Yes.
Not that it would make it inadmissible or something. So it's like, let's test it because this is going to be our best chance for finding evidence.
Yeah. We're back with Catherine and Sarah. They're now with Doc Robbins. We learn that their victim's name is Daniel O'Hennessy. And his brain is green because he was steamed. He got steamed, made his brain green. Green jello. We also learned that his cause of death was due to a blow to the back of the head. And essentially he had bleeding in the brain. But it was like a slow bleed. This wasn't like he got hit and then he immediately went down. He probably was hit in the back of the head somewhere between 12 to 24 hours earlier. So it took 12 to 24 hours for him to like die of this brain bleed. We then have Grissom and Jim Brass there with a officer who lost his badge, come to find out. And my first line in this section of my notes is, why he wear buttons?
Yeah, that's what I was like, this guy has a button-up shirt.
Why he wear buttons? So, all the new uniforms have zippers. Why he wear buttons?
So this is what, I think this is intentional, by the way.
I think it is intentional.
They don't really close this loop this episode, which I wish they would have, because I think I would have given it extra kudos. Mm. It's not that this is an old... later on, they imply that this is an old shirt, and then somehow the guy got a badge. But what I think likely happened is this guy... it's this guy's shirt and badge, and that he probably knows this other... were on the beat together or something, right? And I thought there was going to be some... I thought at the very end there was going to be something like, you know, you'll never guess who so-and-so was on the beat cop with 3 years ago when he lost his badge.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe when you got kicked off the force... spoiler alert, we're kind of getting ahead of here, but that like he gave it as like a token. You know what I mean? In case you ever need this, you've been dishonored, but if you ever get out of a ticket you want to pretend to be a cop someday.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. So like, I often wonder if he knew who the killer had to be and he just you know, protecting his own or friend or however you want to think about it.
Yeah.
But they don't actually tell us that.
Here's a spoiler alert for you. And I don't remember entirely how this resolves, so it's like not really a huge spoiler alert. This is not the last episode we see this officer.
Okay, good. So there's more coming.
There is more coming. Yeah.
That's good to know.
There is more coming. So
it makes me better that they didn't do it this episode.
Yeah, there is more coming with this officer. And the first line. Why he wear buttons? I also
that
wrote
could
down
be the name of the episode.
Why he wear buttons. I also put down that this officer does not like Grissom. Does not like Grissom at all.
I assume that would extend to like almost any CSI.
Yes. But Grissom just happens to be the one in the room. So he's taking his ire at the moment. And boss, yeah.
And the guy basically accusing him.
Yeah. Yeah. So after this exchange, Grissom, he takes a swab from this officer. He carries a swab directly to Greg Sanders. He then goes to Warwick, and Warwick is listening to the 911 call, and he's commenting that, like, what citizen, when talking to 911, is this calm? And that this quote-unquote citizen was also using officer code. So
jargon, like, keywords.
Yeah, so this is at the moment fitting into Grissom's notion that a police officer is responsible. So then we have Catherine and Sarah talking to their victim's roommate, and he, big sports guy. Any time that the college team was playing at their stadium, he was at the stadium. But when they were doing away games, he was not allowed to be at the house because he lost his chill privileges because he like broke their couch and had the neighbors call the cops on them. So
he's a little bit too much of a sports
fan. He's a little over exuberant. So Catherine and Sarah, that brings them to a sports bar. And we learn that the victim was so pumped up. He ended up sending Shirley Temples to this like group of guys in the other room, and that started this like fight.
Was that like a thing for a while?
I have no idea. I don't know.
I get that it's really, like, but do you think most people would give a crap? You know,
no, I would just be like, all right, cool. I would just be like, cool, you wasted your money and I'm not going to drink this. So, all right.
Yeah. I guess maybe a bunch of inebriated 20-year-olds.
Yeah, maybe. Night approach.
The right situation, it could happen.
Yeah. And it appears that some of these said Shirleys are still at the bar today. Crazy enough. Small world. Back at this bar. Before we talk to them, Warwick is back with the dispatcher. So this is where you would have had your actual spot, the guest star. And he negotiates getting the recording from her by upgrading just getting drinks to having drinks at his place. I would rather you take me out and pay for drinks.
First off, there's no world in which she's actually in a position to not give this to him.
This is 100% accurate.
So this is just flirting. So I'm okay with the escalation there.
Yeah.
Right? Because it really is just flirting. But it's really inappropriate on both
sides. Very inappropriate.
But yeah, I was like, you do not need to trade her anything. I'm sure they'll swap something later.
We'll find out, I guess. So we're with Grissom. He's outside, he gets into his car, he goes to pull out, but then the officer stops him and threatens him without threatening him. He's just kind of like, hey. He's like, maybe you'll be at a scene and like you'll need my help and like maybe we'll just all be stuck in traffic, like womping up.
Me and all my buddies.
Yeah. So we're with Warwick and Grissom and Archie, and they're comparing the 911 call to the audio that they pulled of Officer Fromansky from the dispatcher, and no match. No go. Nothing about it matches.
He's like, basically zero chance.
Greg Sanders enters and is like, oh hey, just in case that's not enough, the sweat also not a match to Officer Fromansky. So not looking like Officer Fromansky at this point.
Big bad wolf character that we've just introduced
immediately off,
ruling out
off the table. Grissom is then sitting at a table. Jim Brass enters, and Grissom, I gotta give him kudos here, he's like, hey, I messed up, Jim, like I got ahead of the evidence and I had a theory, and but I also appreciate Jim Brass in this scene. He's like, hey, it's all right. We headbutted a bit, but I kind of liked it. Yeah. So, like, we're good. But this does bring up, so they're trying to figure out, like, okay, if it's not this officer, like, you know, who is it? And Jim Brass is like, well, let me tell you a tale of this other vigilante justice against these people that's related to the same judge.
Yeah, there's a connection there.
There's a connection. So we then have a short scene of Nick. He's going through different layers of the shoe prints, which then shows like a tiny bit of like a few letters on the on the print of the shoe, which then brings us to the emblem outside the courthouse, which is where the title of the episode comes from. It's the All for Our Country. Yep.
Can I say, he uses advanced computer program.
Oh, it must
scan through layers and layers and layers, get all these things, and then he has to like print them out on transparency.
Yeah, and place them on top of each other.
The one thing we can do with technology is the thing that he did manually. Just stitch a photograph together from a bunch of other photographs.
Yeah.
I think the hardest part would actually have been centering all of those shoe prints. Like, you would have to have used a computer to do them so that when you stack them together, they lined up perfectly.
Yep.
So I was like, immediately, like, why? It's for the audience, right? So you can bring it together and I get it. But it was just so funny that he's this high tech thing for so long, and then it took the time to print out 24 transparencies so that he could bring them together and read them. And I was like, I bet you a computer could do that with one button.
Yeah. So it brings Grissom and Jim Brass outside the courthouse. They enter the courthouse. They're then with the judge, and they're not here to ask the judge for a follow-up warrant for the serial killers.
A warrant or something without better evidence.
Instead, they're serving him a warrant. Bum, bum, bah. But before we go with that one, instead, we're with Sarah Catherine O'Reilly, and a.k.a. Shirley. And
yes,
he's saying, like, it was no big deal. It was all harmless. Like, yeah, maybe we got into a scuffle, but, you know. Catherine, during this exchange, is like, hey, you have an interesting ring there. And, like, can I borrow it? And he's like, yeah, sure. Again, this is why you have a lawyer when you're being questioned by a
gold ring. That, like, you'd be like, why? No, it's mine.
It's mine. And so he's like, yeah, that seems all right. Sure.
You want to see it for 5 minutes? Sure. Can you take it home? No.
No. So we have Jim Brass and Grissom. We're back with the judge. The judge also has the clerk and the bailiff there. They need to see the shoes of all of these of all of these people. That's what this warrant is asking for.
Because they're the only ones who would have had access to the information.
Yes, they're the only people that would have had access to the address.
Outside of the CSIs.
Yes. So they're looking at all the shoes, and then come to find out the clerk's shoes are a match a match.
Yep. And there's a whole little scene that he goes out on a smoking break. He puts his cigarette out in the symbol of the state, which has this phrase on it, and it gets burned into his thing. Yep. Very couple of interesting lines here by the clerk. Like, obviously he's a little alarmist and like, you know, where'd you get that thing from? But then he's like, he's almost lauding the judge who gave them this warrant.
Yes, he's like, that judge gives.
Which is, it insinuates the thing we're about to learn and that I've been talking about already this episode.
Yes.
Is that he was once a police officer.
Yes, we'll learn this very, very soon. Before we do, Sarah and Catherine are back together, and Catherine tells the story of Bruce, the shark from Jaws, and he swam in a circle because he had a bent dorsal fin, as does their shark on this ring.
As do the sharks in many animated series in my childhood.
This is true. So
fighting sharks.
This brings us back with their suspect, and they're essentially like, you killed him. You punched him in the back of the head. Your ring proves it.
They're not arresting him, right?
I don't think so. Yeah.
They're just making him feel guilty.
Yeah, and then Sarah has to slide in a punk bitch.
Yeah.
To wrap it up.
Which seems beneath them, but
it seems a little strange. So that's the end of that storyline. There's storyline B all wrapped up for us. We are back with Jim Brass. He is with who we learn that the clerk's name is Stuart Gardner. So he's in interrogation with Jim Brass, and we learn that he was formerly a police officer, and he does not like civilians. He thinks civilians are sleazy and like not worth time, and he essentially only seems to hold police officers in high regard, because Jim Brass is trying to say, like, you know, had you just waited, we would have gotten like the warrant that we needed, and we would have, you know, like gotten the evidence. And he's like, you want me to trust people that are like too stupid for jury duty to like make the decision about whether these people were murderers or not? And I was like, whoa.
Yeah, that's like a common slight, is like, too dumb to avoid jury duty.
Yeah. So
don't avoid jury duty. Do your civic duty.
Yeah. And the whole, as Jim Brass is interrogating Stewart, it's also like showing that Grissom and Work are watching on. And once the interrogation is done, or the part of the interrogation that we see, Grissom and Work are talking, and they're talking about like vigilante justice. And Work is like, to be fair, like, I've thought about it, right? Like, and there's been multiple instances in the show that Work has like done some things to like step out of line to try to prove guilt, you know,
or give the address to a, you know, person, to a friend of his.
Yeah. And we stay with Grissom, and he walks past the officer. At first, like, you could tell the officer sees him, but then he keeps walking. And then Grissom stops, and he kind of turns around, and he sees the officer, you know, leaving. And we don't end here, though. Instead, we end with Grissom at a gun range with the understanding that maybe he is going to start carrying when they're executing warrants, because now this officer is saying that he's not going to show up for him, and like, he's going to tell his cop buddies to not show up for him. So he's like, all right, maybe I have to like better be prepared to take care of myself if I can't rely on the police officers.
So I originally interpreted this as, oh, Grissom's like, because he sees a guy in the hallway, right? Mm-hmm. And Grissom's kind of like, oh, I better carry a gun to protect myself from this cop who wants me dead or something.
Okay.
Well, I didn't know what it was in, but like, more like, I'm going to be carrying a gun now, right?
Yeah.
Like, Jim Brass is right, I should carry a gun. And so I'm here and I'm practicing and I want to show off how good I am to the audience, right? Mm-hmm. And I think I saw, like, on when I went on IMDb, that the synopsis was like, the ends the episode with getting recertified, as if the reason he wasn't carrying a gun was because he wasn't certified to carry one. Apparently also he carried a gun earlier in the show, like in season one.
Okay. He might have.
Somehow being recertified. I was like, they did not communicate that at all.
They did not communicate that at all.
They did not. They're not going to give the audience one iota.
No, not at the least. So that's the end of the episode. Not well communicated, it seems. But Nick, what did you think about today's episode?
I did give the episode 4 stars. Okay. After the first time I watched it, I thought it was a good ending. Is largely on the backs of storyline A.
Yes.
I thought that was, I think they did a good job filling a whole other episode with the same story.
Yeah.
For like tying these two very different crimes together, right? You have the serial killer storyline, that's over.
Yeah.
It basically had them anyways, or would have had them anyways. And then there's this whole like mystery, and you sort of unravel that through the episode. And I think they did a good job of that. And so like, I'm imagining like watching, sometimes they do a double episode start of the season. I don't think that's what they did here. But like, if you were watching these 2 episodes back to back for the first time, and in many ways, I wish I had.
Oh yeah, like just kept watching.
Yeah, it would have been entertaining to watch them all the way through.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I gave it 4 stars. However, I did not give it a replay because on the second watch through, I just didn't know what more I got from it.
Yeah.
So I just gave it a normal play. You know, it's definitely worth watching. I don't know that I'd say rewind it and watch it again.
Yeah.
It was a good episode. You know, after a couple of years, if it's back on television, you can watch it again. But it's definitely not like a need to immediately rewatch it.
So I'm only giving this episode a 3 out of 5.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like maybe I'm coming down from the high of my, my
of
5 out of 5 that I'm just like, ah. I just feel like this, in certain spots, dragged. Like, it just didn't. It didn't like pop along. Like the last episode, I was like, yeah, woo. This one, I kind of was like, all right,
I think what I'll say is, on the second watch through, I was like, did I really give this thing 4 stars the first time I watched it? And I think that because you haven't seen it before, it plays to that fact that it's not super rewatchable.
Yeah.
Once you know the goose, once you know what's up, it's not it's not gripping.
And no. And storyline B is like
bad.
Literally, you could just remove it. Like, there's no need to have it in the episode. Like, it was just that could take up time.
Yeah.
And for some reason, they are in this episode are trying to make Sarah the female version of Grissom, like the completely not in the know, doesn't know any hip anything, and Catherine has to be the one to like school her. And I'm like, she's never. Yes, like she's always been like a science, like more nerdy person, but there's never been an indicator up until this point that she's like totally out of touch with
never seen a sports person with their chest painted color before.
Right.
Like, what could this possibly be?
And not knowing
seven in and paint on a shirt.
And when you refer to Jaws, like you're not you don't understand it's a reference to the movie Jaws. Like, especially when you're talking about a shark, like, come on. And then I feel that beyond Grissom and Jim Brass, which was good, I liked basically all of the scenes between Grissom and Jim Brass in this episode. So that definitely helped my opinion of the episode. But outside of that, there was like no character development. Like there was no one really got anything.
What about Warwick? He's a ladies' man. He's begging. He's bartering dates or evidence.
I don't like it. So, 3 out of 5. I'm coming down from my 5-star high, and this didn't keep me up. This let me slide right on down. And I would also say not a rewatch. Like once you just like you said, like once you and I already knew this one, I did remember the ending of this. So like I already knew. So I was like watching this like, well, I already know it's the clerk.
Guess it wasn't the other couple, which was my prediction.
I know. I did a pretty good job of like not not letting you know one way or the other. Because when you were telling me that, I knew
you were wrong because you were like, you did make reference to the fact that you rarely have met the characters. Although we had, I can't remember if the clerk was in the first half of this
series.
He is. Series.
He is. At the very, when they're trying to go pick up when they're going to the judge to ask the judge why he won't give the warrant, they ask the clerk first, like, what do you mean he's not giving us the warrant? And the clerk says, don't blame me. Like, don't shoot the messenger. Like, it's not my decision to not give you the warrant. Yeah. So he is in that episode, which that's like. I will say that was one thing I didn't want to mention it because I didn't want to ruin this episode. Yeah,
but that's just more points for last episode. That could have gotten me from 4.5 to 5.
He is in that episode. And I was like, all right. I was like, this is pretty good. But it's a watch. Like it is good, especially if you have not seen it. See the conclusion of the episode before. And I don't know. It was fine. It was okay.
Yeah.
It was fine. It wasn't a bad episode. Wasn't a great episode. We'll see.
Watch it twice.
Don't watch it twice. I mean, now I've seen it like 5 times, but we'll see what we rate our next episode when we return with our review of season 4, episode 3, Home Buddies. In the meantime, you can support us on Patreon by going to patreon.com and searching for Who Are You? / a CSI podcast. You can find us on Facebook on the same way. We're also on Twitter/X and Instagram and Blue Sky at Who Are You? CSI Pod. We also have a website, Who Are You? CSI Pod. But otherwise, we'll talk to you next week.
No spoilers.
No spoilers.